It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Ross Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. Only 3 weeks away from the NFL draft. This is the Fantasy Feast Podcast. A couple of days later than normal because of Brian's schedule this week, but that happens. We still make sure to get you a feast every single week. We want you guys to be able to eat some fantasy knowledge. He's really the one that drops most of the knowledge, to be frank. He is at Evan Silva on Twitter. Just a Roto World superstar, really prolific on Twitter. Highly encourage you follow him and read all of his stuff over at rotoworld.com. I'm Ross Tucker if you're new. If you're new, that's awesome. Let me know how you heard about us. I played 7 years in the NFL, 5 different teams. I did not play every single snap for 10 years like DeBrickashaw Ferguson. Maybe that's how I'll introduce myself from now on. Tuckheads.com is rolling. Hopefully several of you guys will want to interact with us over at Tuckheads.com, and we will announce the fifth contestant in the Reality Sports Online League with Evan and myself, the most realistic fantasy football platform. You're going to get the chance to go head-to-head with Evan and I. We'll introduce this week's winner in a little bit. I guess announce more than introduce. And hopefully most of you still remember what it is that you need to do to actually be the winner. We'll tell you that a little bit later in terms of the iTunes and the sponsor confirmations and the iTunes comments. Very excited, though, Evan, about today's guest. Like, really excited because I've read some of his stuff, and he is a smart guy. Great get, man. Tell me about him.
Yeah, he's a full-time licensed engineer turned data analyst, examining the NFL. And he also works closely with professional bettors in Vegas. I mean, this is a guy that they look to for their information. So no doubt, really, really smart guy. And he's done a bunch of off-season studies, and I'm going to kind of quiz him on what he's learned.
His name is Warren Sharp. You can follow him on Twitter at Sharp Football, NFL analyst and writer, ESPN and Fox Sports, owner of SharpFootballAnalysis.com. I mean, I wish my last name was Sharp. It just Ross Sharp. I'm smart. It's Sharp. It's beautiful. He's today's Big Eater.
Big Eater of the Week.
Warren, very excited to talk to you. I got to ask you at some point about the whole Patriots fumble data analysis you did, because I thought that was really interesting, to say the least. I think I just gave you a pretty good intro, and Evan did as well. But I always like to at least get your perspective on how you got to this point where we're having you on the podcast, your background, and all the things you're doing right now. So tell us what you're doing, Warren, and maybe more importantly, how you started to get into everything, get all these gigs.
I appreciate it, first and foremost. Thanks for having me on. I definitely respect your work and Evan's work a lot. So, happy to be here. I started as an engineer. I went to college, civil engineering school, one of the top 10 engineering schools in the country. Graduated from that, got my engineering and training license, then studied for 4 years, got my professional engineering license. And so that's my field. That's my background. I attack things with a problem-solving mentality, try to understand the problem and figure out ways to solve it. And that really parlayed well into the work that I'm doing now. When I was in school, I started developing some math models to try to anticipate what the Vegas point spread should be based upon what they set it at, and try to see if I could come up with a better number. I found that my niche was beating the totals market, the total over-unders on the game. So I had a lot of success with that, and over the years, extremely profitable. From that perspective, got connected with a lot of the bigger sports bettors out in Las Vegas who I speak with on a daily basis during the football season and give information to them, assisting them with what they're doing financially. And started my website. And one of the things that I kind of evolved into was writing a lot, doing a lot of analysis about the game. I don't just sit there and come up with, I think this game's going over. Obviously, I have a math model, but my main focus has been over the last few years analyzing efficiency. And it comes from everything. I'm sure we're going to talk about some of the drafting techniques. We're going to talk about some of the play calling, just a lot of inefficient decisions that are made in the NFL. I think there's a lot of room to capitalize on those inefficiencies by some of the smarter teams. That's why you see some of the teams always at the top and other teams always tending to struggle. It's not just in any one area. It's efficiency in a lot of areas that just adds up to being bad teams, bad decisions. And so I'm just fascinated with information, with data, with analyzing things, and I enjoy sharing it. I enjoy writing, like you said, for ESPN and for Fox, and over at my site, Sharp Football Analysis.
Well, so I got to ask you. I know Evan has a million different questions. I'm going to as well. But I know you came out with, after the whole Deflategate thing, a really interesting study, and this has nothing to do with fantasy football. And if people are mad at me here on the Fantasy Feast, I'm sorry, and if you're Patriots fans and you're mad, I'm sorry, but it was really interesting. But I guess what's the most interesting to me about it now, Warren, is that I think that, correct me if I'm wrong, but they still had the least amount of fumbles last year. So can you just refresh my memory on what the data told you that of the study that you had done and what your thoughts are after the 2015 season has now come and gone?
Yeah, absolutely. I looked at, I went back after we saw what happened in the game and all the issues with all the question marks that were being raised. And I went back and I looked at data since 2000. I looked at it from 2000 through every single season up through 2014 when I ran the analysis. And what I found was that their ability to hold onto the ball and to not fumble the ball was really about the league average from 2000 through 2006. There was no real difference. They had no advantage. They were fumbling the ball at about the average rate as other teams were over that major span where they were winning all their Super Bowls and when Tom Brady was coming into his own. But from 2007 onward, they just took a left turn and went completely off the map in terms of their ability to prevent fumbles, to hold onto the football. It was astronomical. I talked to several data analysts and they confirmed those conclusions. So I came up with a number of articles. Obviously, like you mentioned, got blown up with every single newspaper picking it up and running stories about their lack of fumbling and their ability to prevent fumbles. And could this have something to do with, you know, their deflation of the footballs? And I tried to be very conscious about not passing specific judgment as to why this was happening. Just acknowledging that it was happening. And at first there was some people in the media who kind of gave some backlash about it. But when it came down to it, the guys at 538, who obviously are very well respected, ran their own numbers independent of mine and saw the exact same thing. A guy by the name of Brian Burke, who now works over at ESPN, he was running a site called, I think, Advanced NFL Stats. Brian Burke ran his analysis, came up with the exact same thing. They started to prevent fumbles at a rate unseen in the NFL. Now, last season, their fumble rate was still pretty good. Now, year by year, though, fumble rate fluctuates. And one thing that I did notice is that the weather and the climate up in New England last year during the season, in their games, was abnormally warm. It was not very cold at all, which is one of the reasons why I found it phenomenal and crazy that they were having so few fumbles because, as you know, and as I've studied and analyzed, it's much bit more difficult to hold onto the football when you're playing out in the cold. And so it was crazy how they were basically a league of their own. But last year, the weather was pretty warm. They didn't have many cold weather games, and their fumble rate was pretty good as well. So I don't think it's any one game or one season that would really define whether or not something really different is going on here. But I'm interested to see it over a couple more years and then kind of make some better assumptions, considering that the original data that I looked at spanned from 2000 through 2014. It was 15 years worth of data. I think we need to give it a little bit more look into the next couple of years to make some conclusions.
Awesome. Evan, I'll let you have Adam now that I got the question I really wanted to make sure I knew, because I knew that they had done pretty good.
Yeah, no, good question. I'm glad that you asked about that. staying on the topic of good teams, I think that you've kind of noticed a trend, Warren, that, or at least specific to this offseason, the Patriots, the Steelers, and the Packers all went out and signed tight ends this offseason. What do you think that that tells us? And, you know, how do you think that these tight ends can have an impact and be able to increase the efficiency of those offenses?
Yeah, I'm always extremely intrigued by what some of these smartest teams in the NFL do personnel-wise, because I think that a lot of the less intelligent teams should take note. And it's very intriguing that those teams did feel that that was a big target. And we know, I mean, it's unlike many of those teams to really do a lot in free agency to begin with. So the fact that they went out there, and I know Heath Miller retired, but they went out there and made a key decision to acquire these key pieces at the tight end position with Green Bay, Pittsburgh, and New England. I think that speaks volumes of what they envision as efficient football moving forward. And I think it's things that the three of us already know. It's about being able to be multiple. It's about not having to substitute players. It's about being able to stay out there on the field and run your hurry up or no huddle and create mismatches yourself based on what you get that defense matched up into. And when you have tight ends that are as big and lanky as these guys, I mean, Ladarius Green, Jared Cook, Martellus Bennett, these are big, long-armed players who can catch the ball, who can run. They're very difficult mismatches, and you can line them up all over your offense and increase your overall efficiency. And I know there has been a slight on Jared Cook and, you know, the fact that he hasn't been able to catch the ball as well as, you know, maybe he should, and was this a good signing by Thompson or not. But look, the reality is Aaron Rodgers is not going to be throwing him the ball. If you look at the quarterbacks who were throwing him passes, you're talking about Kellen Clemens, Matt Hasselbeck, Vince Young, Jake Locker, Terry Collins, Case Keenum, Nick Foles. I mean, the list goes on, even a Rusty Smith sighting in there. Like, he was not working with a good quarterback. So I'm interested to see what he does in that Green Bay Packers offense. And I really do think that teams are looking to run a faster tempo this year, trying to create mismatches wherever possible. And that is one key way is getting a very versatile, tall pass catcher at tight end position.
Yeah, and so because these guys can catch and block, specifically Martellus Bennett, and I think Ladarius Green can do that too. I know he's not known as a blocker, but the Chargers often used him as a blocker. That, like you mentioned, these teams don't have to make substitutions. They can play faster. You know, they can put their foot on the gas and prevent the other team from making substitutions and really become more efficient and increase their tempo. So really interesting connection there. I know you did a study this offseason, Warren, about the art of drafting. Can you talk a little bit about that study? And why don't we start by this? Since we've talked about good teams so far, how about we talk about some things that bad teams do? In the top 10, there have been a lot of trade-ups recently by really bad teams. Why don't you talk about the results and, you know, what you found from this study?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there is consistent behavior among some of the bad teams out there. And obviously, one of the things that we see is overspending in free agency and how that kind of hamstrings your team. You're not really getting value when you do something like that. You're paying market price at a premium to do that, and it's very difficult to bring in so many players from other teams and try to win. And what some of these teams end up doing is they go and they get these free agents, they spend significant money to obtain them and to acquire them, and then they take their draft picks, and often they'll package them up and they'll try to move up the draft board. And there's math associated with each draft pick in terms of a quote-unquote point system that's allocated to each pick. There's value there. And obviously Jimmy Johnson had a system back in the day. It's since been refined by a number of guys to create a little bit more efficient system with the numbers that they allocate in points to each of the draft slots. And I did an analysis on my website about trading up and swapping picks, some of what teams move up the board to trade up and how much value they lose in doing so. They get one pick, they give up two, they give up three picks for two picks. Like, it's a lot of different things. And teams like, you know, the Jaguars, the Browns, and the Dolphins are notorious for losing value and trading up the draft board. The Falcons have done it as well. And it's just an issue that hamstrings that team over time. The goal, I am a firm believer in acquiring as much opportunity as you possibly can get. When you have that opportunity, you are going to make mistakes, even if you're the best talent evaluator out there. I mean, look at a guy like Bill Belichick. He brought in Albert Haynesworth. Like, some of these guys who are really smart still make decisions that don't work out because of the unknowns that exist. But if you only have five bites at the apple, then if you miss on two or three of them, your team's not in great position. If you have 10 bites at the apple and you miss on three or four of them even, you still have a lot more that you've acquired in that draft that can bring you forward. So I am a huge proponent of holding on to your draft picks, of looking at teams who are desperate, who notoriously struggle, and they want to trade up and get your pick and possibly you move down. I think that's a great idea. The only time that I would say it's a good idea to trade up is if you have ridiculous number of draft picks, like sometimes New England does have, and they have a lot of picks and they just can't really use them on the roster, and so they will package a couple of those up. But for the most part, I'm not a proponent of moving up in the draft, but a lot of these teams do, and it really costs them.
Yeah, some of the specific trade ups and their results, as you mentioned on your blog, Justin Gilbert by the Browns, he's like the Browns' fifth corner right now. Deion Jordan by the Dolphins, he's essentially out of the NFL. Tavon Austin by the Rams had an okay season last year, being manufactured touches, but overall has been a major disappointment. Trent Richardson by the Browns, you know, technically out of the NFL, apparently going to maybe try to revive his career with the Ravens. Justin Blackmon by the Jaguars, he's out of the NFL. So really, really bad results in those specific instances. One thing you also get into, Warren, is projecting strength of schedule for the upcoming season. You know, this can really help people that are looking at the win totals, you know, the over, trying to, like, for instance, last year, the Jaguars, I think their win total was, their Vegas win total was 5.5. And you can make a decision, you know, do you want to bet the over on the Jaguars beating that, or do you want to bet the under? Do you think they'll be worse than that? What do you think is a good way to project strength of schedule entering the upcoming season? And what do you think that there, are some flaws that people make that can be exploited?
Yeah, there are. Primarily, I think just high level strength of schedule. I think strength of schedule is severely overrated before the season starts, but severely underrated during the season, if that makes sense. I think too many analysts and number crunchers don't really factor in or understand the strength of schedule during the season. They just look at regular statistics and don't understand this team was playing some bad opponents and now they face a tough one, or vice versa. And that's really undervalued. Before the season, what so many people do is they look at they project out what a strength of schedule for a team would be, and they try to analyze how they think the season's going to go based on the strength of schedule. And what they use for the strength of schedule is the prior year win percentage for all of those teams. So in 2016, heading into this year, they'll look back at 2015 win percentage, and they'll look at which teams, you know, their opponents, how they fared at the end of, you know, by the end of the 2015 season. Well, this is a factor in the fact that Tony Romo was lost for, you know, the Dallas Cowboys for so many weeks. That doesn't factor in that Joe Flacco went out for the Baltimore Ravens and now they've got a lot of their injured players back. It doesn't factor in a lot of different things, but people just still, you know, relate to that and still think that that's the best way and optimal way to predict strength of schedule. The reality is the smartest way to predict strength of schedule is to look at the season win totals that are actually posted by the odds makers. And it's not necessarily the very first ones that come out in March by like CG Technologies, which is Cantor Gaming, or even like right now, beginning of April. Once we see the market bet into place by some of the larger money coming in on these win totals, once we see the schedule release and we understand that, once we see the draft, then we have a better idea as to potential, you know, fit, how these teams will fare. And some of the larger money comes in the Las Vegas, and we see how these win totals get bet into place. At that point in time, you know, a team could open at 8 wins. It gets bet down to 7.5, and then at 7. You take those win totals and factor that into your strength of schedule, because that's the most accurate way to project the upcoming year. It's not looking back at last year. So I think a lot of people make that mistake. A lot of the big sites out there, they'll look at last year's win percentage. I guess they're scared to look at the Las Vegas totals or something like that, you know, and integrate that with their work. But the reality is that's the best way to project upcoming strength of schedule.
Awesome. Awesome. And then I know you're working on a project now, kind of visually trying to almost like diagram the, you know, strength and weaknesses of offenses and defenses. Can you talk about a little bit about this project that you're working on? I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm going to try to incorporate it into my fantasy analysis for 2016.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm really excited about this. I kind of came up with the idea of it, you know, this past off season, but I feel like we are in a statistical purgatory, so to speak. I feel like a lot of the statistics that we're looking at and the manner in which we're looking at them is akin to back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, where we didn't have many TVs. It was a lot of print newspaper or listening on the radio. You get, you know, these columns of teams are on the left and here's where they rank in the statistics on the right. And you go to any of the major sites and that's what they have. They have black and white text and they have rankings in columns. And, you know, if I were to tell you, visualize a bell-shaped curve, you know immediately the way that that analysis would be figured out. You know immediately that there's going to be a higher volume at the median and less at either end. You understand what that looks like instantly. But if I were to just give you a column of data and that basically ends up looking like a bell-shaped curve when plotted, it's going to be much more difficult for you to really make heads or tails of it, where you could make a value of heads or tails in a millisecond with the bell-shaped curve. I'm looking at data in a different manner. I'm looking at developing infographics that both visually and just they stand out and they pop immediately, so that the user can actually interact with them to figure out what stats they want to see and be displayed on these various charts. And it's all going to be color-coded, and it's not just the standard stats. I think a lot of times we, as analysts, look too much at the standard statistics, you know, yards per carry, yards per play. We don't really look at efficiency. Like, how often are third downs converted when you throw it to the receiver when it's short of the sticks instead of throwing it beyond the sticks? How often on second and short are you taking a shot down the field instead of just doing a quick get to the line of scrimmage and hand the ball off to whatever running back's on the field without substituting, catching the defense not in their short yardage package, and converting a first down? You know, and those are a lot of statistics that I'm going to be able to present in a visual manner using some of this technology that I'm developing for this upcoming season. And we're going to be able to look at matchups and isolate mismatches. We're going to be able to look at downs. We're going to be able to look at weeks of the season. We're going to be able to look at this certain team against the tight end in the red zone. Where does it, you know, how poorly do they defend the tight end position? And in a manner, I mean, this is like scouting the teams could actually utilize. And it's going to depict this in an instant. You're going to be able to instantly click and see a picture, a diagram of this color-coded, so that you know where the strengths and the weaknesses are of some of these matchups. And it's a lot that is going into it. I know I've sent you some of the models and the templates, and I know you're excited as well. So I can't wait to finish up with this project and hopefully have it ready here probably by June or July is my goal.
Awesome, man. Great stuff, Warren.
Yeah, Warren, I have one more for you. And I have one more for you. This is amazing. I know that these numbers really haven't come out yet, and you were talking about it. What's the lowest team total win-loss you've ever seen?
Usually they don't ever post them below four. So, I mean, usually it's around four, 4.5 is probably the lowest that you would see as being projected.
Okay, so are you with me that all three of us should right now bet our entire life savings that the Browns are going to be under?
Well, I took the Browns under win total last year, and you know, the way that I analyze that matchup in terms of the projecting out the season is, even if they had won the five games by like week 10, I did not see them winning even two more games the rest of the season. Like the way that their schedule last year stacked up, it just did not look good. And as it turned out, they did okay earlier in the year, but obviously they didn't do very well later in the year. They have mortgaged this season. I think it's pretty obvious that with the way that they brought their talent evaluators in and their strategy, they're looking to shed and they're looking to build from the ground up. So I agree. It's going to be very difficult for them to compete.
They're tanking like the 76ers.
Dude, they were 3-13 last year, and they have lost six of their best 9 or 10 players. And they were 3-13 last year. I mean, I don't see how they get to four wins. And by the way, I'm not like criticizing them. If you're a Browns fan, you don't really, I don't know that you really want to win five or six games. I don't know what that does for you. I think you want to go 2-14 and have the number one pick next year. But I just don't see a scenario unless RG3 plays like he did as a rookie where they win four games. I mean, I can't wait to see what the Vegas team total is. Warren, I love talking to smart guys. You were phenomenal. It's amazing the dudes Evan gets each and every week here. Thanks so much for coming aboard. Where can people check out your stuff? I know at Sharp Football. By the way, is that your real last name or did you change it because of your whole I'm a smart guy thing?
No, that is my real last name. So I've kept that the same. But, yeah, it's at Sharp Football is where you can find me on Twitter. And that's reality is that's the easiest way to stay up to speed. I mean, I'm a big fan of Twitter. You can find out any of my projects. You know, I'm going to tweet those out. So that's probably the easiest way for most people. But if you don't have Twitter, I guess you probably need to go to the website, which is sharpfootballanalysis.com.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Warren.
You got it. Happy to do it.
Ever wanted to ask an NFL player a question? Well, here's your chance. It's time to ask Ross.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a question. These emails have been more just announcing the Reality Sports Online winners that send me emails. I will say this, though, Evan, before we even get to the email, I like that guy, man. I mean, I like pretty much every guy you bring on, but that guy, I mean, I feel like I want to get all these different dudes like Kevin Cole and Warren Sharp and stuff. I want to get, like, feeds from everything they're doing and have it go into the back of my brain like the Matrix. You know what I mean? I want to be sucking the intelligence out of these dudes, sucking these numbers into my brain while I'm talking on the radio and the podcast so I seem like unbelievably knowledgeable.
I hear you. I think the same unbelievable thing. I dream about that.
Dude, I'm glad he's not in the Reality Sports Online League, but you know who is? Travis Rasmussen. Love the Fantasy Feast podcast. I really want a spot in the league with you and Evan. Can't remember the name of it, but the one where you give players extensions and contracts. This dude not only did the iTunes review and joined the email list, but he sent three different sponsor confirmations. One of them was an Amazon. I can't remember the other two. But Travis Rasmussen, like everybody we're picking, he wanted in bad. Guess what, Travis? You are in. You want it bad enough, you can get in as well. Five down, five to go. We're halfway through. You can still get in. I can't wait to go toe-to-toe in this league. The more realistic it is, the more I will dominate and embarrass Evan. Other than that, I'm full. I'm stuffed. We'll be back on Wednesday recording next week. I think we're done here.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
I did it. I finally did it. I got a new car. I've been talking to you guys about it for a while. I got a new car. I needed one. My other one died. I got a new Denali, and I used TrueCar because why wouldn't I? I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for months now, and it's just a better experience. I mean, you're able to lock in the savings with a dealer on the website. They've got a huge certified dealer network. So if you're not sure how it works, you just go to the TrueCar website or you use the TrueCar app, and they've got this bell curve. It's a pricing curve that shows you exactly what that vehicle you want is going for in your local market. And then you can actually online connect with a TrueCar local certified dealer of your choosing, and you lock in the savings off the MSRP. You just go in, you hand them the certificate that you printed out off your computer, and boom, you're good to go. Over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.